Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI. This is the Smart Passive Income Podcast with Pat Flynn, session number 258. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host, dad jokes and puns are part of his daily ritual, Pat Flynn.
Hey, and real quick, our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you haven't tried a sit/stand desk before, this offer from Uplift is the perfect opportunity. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. A desk should fit the user, right? Which is exactly why Uplift Desk has a ton of customization options. They're stable, the materials are solid. I mean, just the choices of material alone are incredible, all the way from laminate to eco to bamboo and even solid wood. The option to stand while working is just healthier, better circulation, better movement, which helps to reduce all kinds of different health risks and repetitive strains. And over a million customers have chosen Uplift Desk for their innovative designs, direct to consumer pricing, same day shipping. They can even give you free accessories with every desk. Uplift is a great deal, and they're built to last and include an industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that as well. So go to upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's upliftdesk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. What's up, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me today in this session of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. You know, the past few weeks, or at least this month, we've been talking a lot about productivity, and I wanted to have one more episode to round out this concept and to make sure that we can all, moving forward into the year, can really make sure that we are approaching productivity in the right way. And I wanted to bring somebody on who's written about this, who has really structured his whole life around productivity. And this is Chris Bailey from alifeofproductivity.com. He's got a couple TED Talks under his belt, and he's got a best-selling book as well. It's called The Productivity Project. And yeah, I know some of you might be thinking, oh gosh, now another one of these episodes that's going to teach me something that's maybe different than what other people have said. Now, first of all, Chris comes on and he verifies a lot of what's already been said, which is great. And so those concepts you want to make sure you incorporate into the work that you do moving forward. However, I will say that in my experience, when experimenting like with
with what Chris has done his whole life to try and become a more efficient person and do more meaningful work, I found that sometimes it's just the one tip you hear from that one person. It can also be a very small thing that can make a huge difference down the road. So keep an open ear. There's a lot of great information in this, and Chris has a great personality, fun to talk to. So I'm excited to share this with you. So let's not wait any longer. Here is Chris Bailey from alifeofproductivity.com and author of The Productivity Project. What's up, everybody? I'm so happy to welcome none other than Chris Bailey from alifeofproductivity.com and author of The Productivity Project. Chris, thank you for being here and welcome to the show.
Pat Flynn, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Super stoked to talk to you. You know, this month we've been talking all about productivity. We've interviewed people like Cal Newport and Mike Vardy, and I'm trying to be the best and most productive person I can be. And the only way I know to do that is to do the research. And I'm going out there, reaching out to new people, understanding how they work. So I want to know, you know, how you work and how you stay productive, what your definition of all that stuff is. But before any of that, I just want to know more about you. Who is Chris Bailey, and when, at what point in your life did productivity become important to you?
It's always kind of existed in the background of my life, if that makes sense. And I think that's true for everybody, where whether we tune into this kind of frequency of the way that we live and work or not, productivity is this idea, because it's about getting stuff done, whether in our personal life, whether in our work life, it's always there, whether we realize it or not. And I think it was about a decade ago, probably more by this point in my life, where I started tuning into this frequency and thinking, okay, you know, we all get 24 hours every day, but some of us are able to accomplish a disproportionate amount in those hours. Mm-hmm. And so I started to dig deep into the psychology of productivity, into, you know, these productivity hacks, a lot of which are BS, frankly, because, you know, they're fun to read about, but we don't actually earn the time back we spend reading about them. And that's the thing about a lot of productivity advice is, it's one thing to read about it, but you have to make all that time back and then some, or else you're basically just kind of reading or listening to productivity porn. There's a lot of that out there. And so this last decade has been kind of a process of sifting out the stuff that works from the stuff that doesn't, to really see what ways we can accomplish more on a daily basis.
Love it. What were you doing before all this productivity work and coming out with the book and all that stuff?
I was in business school. I was doing a bunch of internships at Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, studying management and marketing. And so, you know, I had that experience to when I graduate, I got a couple of job offers. But I thought, you know, if there's a time to actually look at something that's meaningful to me, that was the time. And so I thought, you know, I'm gonna decline these jobs and figure out, you know, sift out the stuff that works from the stuff that doesn't. In this productivity project. So that's kind of how it all, this racket, as cool. You say, started.
Yeah. How did you determine what was right or wrong for you? Like, what was the research process like for you?
It was really just soaking up the information and experimenting, you know, what I could with it. The experimental angle was kind of the big angle that took the cake, as, you know, being the most interesting. But the research, it was first and foremost a research project. I saw it as kind of like a PhD thesis, in a way where the book is like, it's like a thesis that people actually read. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry for anybody who's doing a PhD. I hope she's not listening to this right now, because she's actually doing her PhD. Oh, she might actually be listening in the other room. And I'm so sorry, Arden, if that offended you.
Well, just
you.
Tell her to start at like 5 minutes in so she could skip it. So
yeah. Start this. Yeah. I'll send like a, you know, a little timestamp link in Overcast or whatever player she uses. Yeah. So it was really first and foremost a research project looking at those journal articles that people kind of skim over, looking at all the books that people had published. And more than that, once people started reading my site, which I didn't expect to happen, I had the chance, kind of a gateway, to interview the people that I respected the most in this space. People like David Allen, who created the Getting Things Done methodology. Mm-hmm. One of my heroes. You know, some people have sports heroes and like celebrity chef heroes. I have like heroes like David Allen and Charles Duhigg, who wrote The Power of Habit, who have really explored these ideas of productivity for years and years. So I chatted with them. I looked at the research, and I boiled that research down to actually get my hands dirty on it, to, you know, like to experiment with meditation. I meditated for 35 hours in a week. You know, there's a lot of research between our wake up time and how productive we are. Mm-hmm. So I woke up at 5:30 every morning for a few months, you know, worked 90 hour weeks for a month. And, you know, experimented with my body fat percentage and how much muscle mass I had to see the impact that physical activity had. And so really, that was kind of the sexier part of the project, where to me, you know, if I look at how I spent my time, it was mostly a research project and an interview project. And the experiment was kind of putting all of that into practice.
And that's what the book is about, how you've sort of determined what has become the right strategies for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's about 250 pages and there's a 500 page book on all this stuff that didn't work. And so, you know, after sifting through all this stuff, you know, the year was kind of a year to separate the productivity advice that works from the stuff that didn't. And so that's what made it into the book, about 25 of those things that actually, you know, help us accomplish more. Because that's really, you know, that was the biggest mistake I made at the start of this project, I think. You know, even though I'd been exploring this idea for a decade or so, I really saw productivity. I equated that with how busy we were or how much we got done over the course of the day, which I think is a trap a lot of people fall into. You know, I saw, you know, if I wrote 2,000 words in a day, that meant I was twice as productive as if I wrote 1,000 words. But I think, I forget what made this bit flip, but there was something that happened in the project where I started to view productivity not as how much we produce, but as how much we accomplish. And more than that, you know, accomplishing what we intended to do in the first place, because that's really what we're left with at the end of the day. And so, the tactics that made it into the book are the ones that actually lead us to not necessarily just do more over the course of the day or become more busy over the course of the day, but actually get more meaningful stuff done.
I like that. So it's almost changing the word productivity, like you're just creating products all the time or coming up with new stuff or doing things, like you said, to almost like accomplishativity or whatever.
Yeah, successalativity. I don't know because all these words have like such an incredible amount of baggage associated with them. Like, you know, just kind of an inside baseball story. When I was in the proposal stage of the productivity project, I originally called it the productivity playbook. And I kind of pushed back when my publisher said, no, we want to call it the productivity project. And they had all this experience, but I was kind of averse to the word project. Mm-hmm. But when I started talking with people about the idea, it turns out that people weren't turned off by the word project. They were turned off by the word productivity, because people equate this idea of productivity as something that feels so cold and corporate and all about efficiency and boiling our life down to a spreadsheet. But I would argue that nothing could be further from the truth. It's when the day is done, what is different in the world or in our work or in our life because we lived a day of our life. That's what productivity is to me. It's how much we accomplish. And success is another word that has a lot of baggage associated with it. You know, I think of these people with like slick back hair with big smiles and Photoshop faces on their website. That's what comes to mind, but it's really just accomplishing more on a daily basis. I think that's how we're meant to view productivity.
So how can we do that? If I were to ask you, Chris, what are some of those top tips that you share in your book or discoveries that you've had, the non-BS kinds of productivity tactics out there? What are some of those ones that you have?
Yeah, the best tips require more work and more effort than these kind of quick productivity hacks.
Well, that's not what people want to hear.
No, God, people are turning off. If we didn't turn people off from the PhD stuff, man, people are definitely tuning out now. But one of my favorite rules is a simple one. And it speaks to the idea that what lies at the heart of productivity isn't, you know, working faster or more frantically or more often on autopilot. Mm-hmm. It's working, first of all, on the right things, but working on those things deliberately and with intention. And I think that idea of intention lies at the heart of productivity, because for the simple fact that not all tasks in our work are created equal. You know, we accomplish, you know, 100 times as much if we're writing a blog post or connecting with a new customer or a new client or, you know, pitching ourselves than we do, say, you know, doing something like watching Netflix. You know, it doesn't take much mental calculus, but we don't right. always spend our time in that direction. And that's where intentionality lies in, where when we take that time to take a step back and actually decipher what's actually important on a daily basis, that's when we can level up to become more productive. And there's a rule that I personally use every single day called the rule of three. And it goes like this. At the start of the day, you fast forward to the end of the day in your head and you ask yourself, by the time this day is done, what three main things will I want to have accomplished? And it works because, you know, first of all, we separate what's important from what isn't. We actually do the calculus quickly in our head and, you know, we act on our gut because we all know what's actually important. But it only takes a minute. We decide what we don't do. We consider the constraints of our day because productivity is so often a process of understanding our constraints. Some days, you know, will be mapped out for us with meetings and other days we'll have more flexibility. But it works because it's so difficult to remember what's important. And choosing only three, you know, there's something, not to ramble on too much about this
idea.
No,
keep going,
so simple,
please. This is good.
But good. There's something inherent about the way our brains are wired, where we're wired to think in threes. We have sayings like things come in threes and celebrities die in threes and the third time is the charm. Blood, sweat, and tears, the good, the bad, the ugly. Mm-hmm. Even a story, which is a sequence of dozens of events usually that happen one after the other, we divide into three parts, the beginning, the middle, and the end.
Back to the Future, one, two, three.
One, two, three. We, you know, the trilogies of all shapes and sizes award three Olympic medals. We grow up immersed in stories like mm-hmm. the Three Little Bears, the Three Blind Mice. You know, I could go on, but we're wired to think in threes. And because this simple rule fits with the way that we think, in addition to, you know, being so constrained that it forces us to actually choose what's important, we can actually act on what's important throughout the day when we carve out these intentions and actually accomplish more this way.
Interesting. I like that, the threes. And it kind of reminds me of, I use a journal every day called the 5-Minute Journal. And actually, when you wake up in the morning, you write down the three things that you hope to accomplish during the day, which that yeah. by far more than any part of that exercise of journaling has been the most helpful. So I absolutely agree with you. And it doesn't necessarily need you to write it down. I think you say even just really quickly, you can just think to yourself when you start your day, kind of make that a habit or a practice. Just what are those three things? Now, my question to you is, well, what about the one thing? Some people go into the process of, well, let's just do one thing per day and focus on that. Obviously, you probably know the book, The One Thing, and that, yeah. that sort of stuff. So how does this work together with that? Or is this something, or is this like a different philosophy?
You know, I think both have their place. And this is, I think, one of the things that people have to take to heart with productivity advice is it's not what productivity advice is right. It's about what advice is right for you. Mm. And so one of the things that I advise in my book, you know, it's not some, you know, 3-step plan or whatever to bolster my speaking and my consulting and my stuff like that. It's really, you know, here's a collection of things that worked for me. Take what you need, take what you want and leave the rest. Because this is one of the truths about personal productivity is that because we're all wired so differently, different tactics will work better for different people. You know, waking up early is a pretty good example of this. Depending on our chronotype, which is, you know, how our energy levels naturally fluctuate over the course of the day, we'll have different peak energy periods throughout the day. You know, mine happen to be between 10 and noon and 5 and 8 p.m. And so that's when I make sure I work on my most productive tasks. But other people, you know, maybe somebody who's an early riser might do their best work in the morning. And so it really does depend on the way that we're wired. This is why that experiment to wake up at 5:30 was such a painful experience for me, because, you know, there's zero connection between what time we wake up at and our socioeconomic standing, because what differs between successful people and productive people is what they do with the hours of their day after they wake up that make the difference. You know, I know a lot of, you know, people who are operating at a super high level who get out of bed and struggle to do so at 9 or 10 in the morning, and they work until 1 or 2 in the morning as well. And so it really is about what advice works for you. I will say that in practice, you know, we have more things to do over the course of the day than you know, one thing would allow. I'm not familiar with all of the intricacies of the system. I have to pick up that book again. But 3 seems to be a number that works well, you know, in your case, in my case, in a lot of different cases. Mm-hmm. I think where one thing becomes vital is in working towards these ideas in the moment, because, you know, the most crucial and vital elements of our work simply require more time, but they also require more attention and more energy than kind of the simple habitual things. And so working on just one thing at a time in the moment, I think it's a powerful strategy as well.
I like that. I think attention is definitely the one of the most important parts of this formula of actually being productive. But how do we pay attention to something solely when there are so many other things out there that are trying to fight for our attention at the same time?
Well, that's the thing about distractions is in the moment, what we see as distractions are more attractive than the work that we ought to be doing. You know, firing up Facebook will always be a more sexy task, a sexier task to us than, say, writing a report or, you know, doing it, whatever it is that we need to be doing. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, I think the best possible solution to dealing with these things is to deal with them ahead of time. And how I like to look at the potential distractions and interruptions, or really anything that can hijack our attention throughout the day, is by looking at 2 different criteria. The first being whether or not we have control over it. There are some things we can control and other things like office visitors that maybe we have less control over. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is whether or not they're annoying, so they're kind of unwelcome, or whether they're fun, and so they're nice kind of reprieves from our work. And so, you know, you can kind of divide them up into a 2x2 grid in your head. And the things that you have no control over, you can't really change how you deal with them ahead of time, but you can change how you relate to them after they come up. And so, you know, annoying ones, dealing with them and then getting back on track and enjoying the distractions and the interruptions that you can't control. And that's a difficult thing to do. That's the hardest kind mm-hmm. of bit of this. But the ones that you can control, you know, things like annoying ones like email alerts and text messages and things of that nature, and fun ones like, you know, news websites and things like that. We can download apps like Self-Control and Rescue Time to actually, you know, modulate our behavior ahead of time. And we can, you know, deal with annoying ones by turning off alerts and interruptions and disconnecting when we do our most vital work. And so I think the answer is to deal with these things ahead of time, simply because of the fact that in the moment, we're going to fall victim to these things. Everybody does. You know, the productivity experts out there, you know, everybody falls victim to distractions because of the fact that they're more interesting than our work in the moment.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, there's a couple of levels to that. For the first level is, well, let's see if we can live our work more than our distractions, for one. So are you doing the things that are making you excited? And yes, even though we might have an exciting project, there's going to be smaller things in there that is going to feel like grunt work. I remember when I was writing my book, for example, when I came to a tough moment, Facebook would open up and Twitter would open up, and I would just kind of go back to my sort of security blanket of social media for a while and get those immediate responses and good feelings from interacting with people and whatnot. But in general, I loved writing the book, and I knew what it was for, and I had that driving me.
It's funny you mention writing a book, because, you know, the research on procrastination that I conducted during the project, it showed that there are certain attributes that a task can have, it's fascinating science behind this stuff, that make us more likely to procrastinate on a certain task. And there's 7 of them. Whether a task is boring, I'll try to remember them here on the podcast, whether a task is boring, whether it's frustrating, whether it's difficult, whether something lacks personal meaning, whether it lacks intrinsic rewards, so it's not rewarding when mm-hmm. we do it, whether it's ambiguous, and whether it's unstructured. And the more of these triggers that a task sets off, the more aversive we find it. And the more likely we are in turn to fall victim to these distractions. And so you look at something like writing a book, which, you know, anybody who's written a book or has tried and struggled to get into the process of doing so, you know, you've probably found it at times boring, frustrating, difficult, ambiguous, unstructured, all of the above. Doing our taxes is the same. Cleaning our closet is the same, you know, cleaning the basement or the garage. And so the things that we put off the most, you know, procrastination is a purely visceral and emotional reaction to something that we really don't want to be doing. And so something we're procrastinating on sets off most of these triggers. And so disabling the distractions ahead of time becomes all the more important. You know, I wrote, I don't know if you're the same, but I wrote most of my book while I was disconnected from the internet, because the same research that shows that we procrastinate on tasks with these triggers, it shows that we spend 47% of our time on the internet procrastinating. Yeah. And so things quite literally, when we're doing our most diverse of work, take twice as long when we're connected to the internet.
I think that's such a small tip that can have such a big impact and reward for people, is just turning off the phone for a while when you're working, or turning off notifications, which you have the ability to do on your desktop nowadays. And, you know, a lot of people feel and fear that, you know, the world's going to crash the moment they do that, you know, or they're going to miss out on something. But then you realize, I mean, I've been doing this myself. You turn it off for a couple hours, you turn it back on, and nothing drastic happened. You know, I had to learn the same thing with email. I was told by my assistant who I hired to help me crush my inbox. She said, okay, well, let's try something. Let's not answer any emails for 24 hours and I'll show you nothing bad is going to happen. Because I was so like, oh, I got to answer quickly and right away. And so when the emails would come in, that's when I would answer. And she's like, no, you can't do that. And
No.
And then I realized, it's been 24 hours. My business is still running. Everything's still fine. And you know, people don't expect me necessarily to reply right away. And so anyway, this is...
And if you run a team, people start to rely on themselves more. If it takes too longer to respond, they'll only bug you if they absolutely need something to you.
True.
From you.
Very true. And I also saw on your site, I was very happy to read this because I do this myself. And that is, I have a second device that I only use for my distractions outside of my work computer. Can you talk a little bit about what that means?
Well, I've got this iPad here, and this is you know, something I started doing recently as kind of an experiment, but I've delegated this device to be my distractions device. And so I only have Twitter on this device. I only have social media on this device. I only have email on here as well. And I have this long password that's 20 or 30 characters long and in the security deposit box in my office here, if I absolutely need to check it on my desktop. So I've put it, you know, a big temporal distance away from me. But the idea is, if I want to be distracted, that's okay. But I can't be distracted where I do my most important work. Because, and this is one of the findings from the project, that we have three main ingredients that we combine over the course of the day in order to be productive. And this is one of those things I found when everything was done. It was kind of like a eureka moment where I found that every single thing that worked in terms of making me more productive over the course of the day and actually accomplishing more fell into one of these three categories. Either managing my time, of course, you know, we have to manage our time around those of other people. Managing my energy, and so, you know, putting good fuel into my body, drinking caffeine strategically instead of habitually, you know, putting good, you know, food and exercise into my body as well, and managing my attention. And so, you know, dealing with distractions ahead of time, interruptions ahead of time, and really developing a deep focus. And a lot of that ties to, I believe, what Cal was chatting about last week, in doing deeper work. Mm-hmm. And I love that idea, you know, bringing more focus to what's in front of us in the moment. You know, it's an idea that's been around for thousands of years in terms of mindfulness practices, but it's something that the world that we live and work inside of today pushes us in the other direction, even though it's never been more important that we need to focus on one thing at a time. And so those three ingredients, you know, time, attention, and energy, we need to manage all three more deliberately. And, you know, having a second distractions device where we only do certain work on that thing, we can be more deliberate about managing our attention that way, because it's probably the more difficult one to manage, isn't it? You know, it's kind of easy to get into a routine, relatively speaking, mm-hmm. to eat better and to exercise, and we occasionally fall into those. But managing our attention in order so that we can be less distracted over the course of the day and less interrupted, that's kind of the difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's funny. I imagine people listening to this and going to their spouses and saying, "Hey, Chris said I can get a second device so that I can." I'm curious, do you go so far as to schedule your distractions? And this is something that Cal had talked about before on the podcast. And I'm curious to know, in terms of what you do and when you do it, how much are you using your calendar?
I use my calendar throughout the day because, you know, simply to get events out of my head. Whenever something is time specific, it goes in the calendar. And so I usually block off the hours of 10 and noon and 5 and 8 p.m. so that I can have that time to dive deeper into my work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I use the calendar quite a bit.
Are you scheduling distractions as well?
Email, especially.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I only check my email once a day because, you know, it's kind of a luxury to be able to do so. But, you know, when you're self-employed, you gotta take advantage of these luxuries. So I check my email every day at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because that's kind of when my energy levels naturally dip. And so I work on a task that is less important. And I have a VIP email for the people that I work closely with throughout the day. But it's really, you know, managing our attention, it's the more difficult ingredient to manage. And it's been a process over time. You know, I've relegated kind of the distractions that will derail my focus to the distractions device. But for the ones that occasionally serve as interruptions, I've learned to kind of compartmentalize those. And so email is a good example of one. Phone calls and interviews are another example where I like to batch those together. You know, it's not always possible, but whenever it's possible, I do. And so really, I do deal with most of these things ahead of time. Meetings is another one. You know, I think one of the most productive things that we can do is to, whenever we're invited to a meeting, question the value of that meeting relative to the other tasks in our work. Because, you know, it takes an hour to attend a meeting. And, you know, if we do kind of deep work on a daily basis, you know, that takes valuable attention away from other things because we're worrying about the meeting ahead of time and kind of transitioning outside of it. And so, you know, questioning the value of these things ahead of time. I never attend a meeting without an agenda, simply because, you know, an agenda to a meeting, I think it's valuable to see the agenda as kind of like a pitch for your time and attention. Seeing a podcast that way, you know, thanks for listening to this one, Pat, and I thank you. But in every further episode, whether of this show or future ones, look at the description and question, you know, will this be a valuable use of my time and attention? You know, podcasts, Netflix episodes are the exact same way. And so I think that really is the best strategy that we can deploy, is to question the value of these things in the first place.
I love it. And I love how you are making this more of a human approach. Like you said a while back, that, you know, a lot of this productivity advice we hear all the time feels cold and it's very corporate. You actually have a TED Talk that you did in Liverpool about, you know, making productivity more human. How else might we make productivity fun for us instead of like a challenge or something just kind of that we have to do because nothing's aligning in our lives right now?
I think that it's for somebody like looking at that statement on the surface, like how can we make productivity more fun? It seems like the most paradoxical thing in the world, doesn't it? But I think, you know, one of the most valuable things that we can do is to keep a list of everything that we accomplish over the course of the day or over the course of the week, rather, and over the course of the year. Because, you know, it's the nature of our brain that we remember the things that we've completed less than the things that we have in progress. And so as a consequence of that, we find ourselves worrying of everything that we have on our plate. and forgetting all of the accomplishments that our productivity has led to. Mm. And this is kind of another paradoxical thing about productivity is the idea that you want to become more productive in a way implies that you're not entirely satisfied with where you're at already. And it was a tough thing to rectify in the project because, you know, it's kind of a holy crap moment where I thought, like, why don't I just kind of be nice to myself in the process instead of just pushing myself like a robot to get more done? And an accomplishments list is a fantastic way to do that. And, you know, I recommend keeping one. You know, look back from January all the way through today at the things you've accomplished so far, and then keep that list running through the rest of the year. So anniversaries you've had with your partner. I was going to say partners. Maybe you're in that situation where you have multiple partners.
Maybe it's an anniversary of like your business partners and your business that you started. So maybe this.
Yeah.
That's what you meant.
That's exactly what I meant. That's exactly what I meant. You know, not your three wives. You know, put anniversaries on there. You know, certain work accomplishments that you've had, big milestones, so that you can look back on this list at the end of the week, if you keep a weekly one, at the end of the year, or, you know, occasionally at this yearly accomplishments list, and really pat yourself on the back. And this is, I think, one of the best attitudes that we can have as it relates to our productivity, is to never truly be satisfied with where we're at. So to always strive to accomplish more, which is healthy, but only when we invest in our happiness along the way. And so I love your journaling practice. It's something that I do as well. You know, every morning, you know, think, you know, what three things do I want to accomplish today? Every night, think, okay, what three things was I grateful for today that happened? Mm-hmm. I do this with Arden as we're falling asleep. Every night we think, okay, what three things are we grateful for in the world, in our lives, in each other? And, you know, a lot of research has been conducted that this really does train our brain to look for patterns of positivity around us, to, you know, because so much of our work trains us to look for the negatives. You know, we get rewarded in work for looking at problems and putting out fires and solving difficult tasks, especially when we're leading a team of other people to do so. Mm-hmm. And I think that becomes critical, you know, recalling things we're grateful for, journaling about positive experiences we've had, keeping accomplishments lists of everything that our productivity leads to, you know, working with more intention and actually slowing down. Slowing down, I think, is one of the, it's kind of paradoxical because we think of productivity as doing more and more and more, faster, faster, faster. But I don't think that's true when we do work with our brains rather than with our bodies. You know,
yeah.
When we did kind of work in the factory on an assembly line with our hands, that might have been true. You know, the harder and the faster we worked, the more widgets we produced in the same amount of time. But today, you know, when we have these other ingredients like our attention, which is so vital, like our energy, which is so vital, actually taking time to slow down, work with more intention, whether every moment or in general, you know, kind of quiet things down a bit by disabling the distractions that we have control over, you know, setting these intentions for the day, thinking about what's important before we start working. It's a more human way of looking at productivity, and it actually fits with the way that our brains work, where when we're kinder to ourselves, we become happier and we can become more productive at the same time.
Love it. Love it. Chris, thank you for that. There's one more question I want to ask. You know, we've been talking a lot about productivity this month. It was sort of the theme of the month here on the blog and on the podcast. So I think people, okay, they understand that they, you know, have to be productive. They have to understand what their next thing is and make sure that they're getting the results from the work that they're putting in and being smart about where they're putting their time. But, you know, at some point, enough has to be enough, right? In terms of, okay, let's try and get even more productive. Let's shave like a tenth of a second off this task. And, you know, let's get more, like, you know, I feel like productivity is sort of like a, like you're painting. And like the question I have for all the painters out there, if this is a good analogy, maybe it's a terrible one, we'll see. But, you know, when you're painting something, it's like, how do you know when you're done? Like, how do you know that's the last stroke? In productivity, how do you know that you've done like the last stroke so you can then stop worrying about all these productivity tips and hacks and tricks and tactics out there and start actually just getting in the rhythm and getting into deep work and actually accomplishing the things that you want to accomplish?
Yeah, it's so surprising how few people know what they want And so I think that's a question you have to ask yourself before you invest in your productivity. Mm. You know, what are my values? What do I actually care about? But not, you know, in general, not, oh, I want to make a lot of money and I want to have a good family. But like, what are your values? Do you care about connecting with people? Do you care about helping people? Do you care about meaning? And, you know, what are your deeply held values? And you can Google things like list of values. And I have an exercise in my book, you know, before I get into the productivity tactics, you know, why are you doing this? You know, if you invest in your productivity so that, and you become so productive so that you actually get 2 more hours of free time every day to spend as you please, because that's, I think, where productivity is designed to lead to. You know, that's how I see it fitting into my life is mm-hmm. productivity exists so that we can carve out more time for what's actually meaningful to us. Because if you look at how the average American spends their time, you know, we spend a third of our day working, we spend a third of our day sleeping. Once we account for the household chores and eating and keeping up with social commitments, we only have so much time left at the end of the day. So if you had 2 hours of free time every day to spend as you please, how would you spend that time? And, you know, why aren't you doing that already if you can make money doing that? Mm-hmm. You know, because chances are it'll make you quite a bit happier than you are already. And you know, why not kind of approach things from that direction instead? And I think the value in productivity is that we only have so much time, you know, and everybody's heard this, but the way that I've started thinking about this on a daily basis is, you know, we look at how the average American spends their time. And let's say for the ease of math, we each live until we're 90, which is, you know, it's a pretty good life. But if we spend a third of our day sleeping, we live until we're 60, essentially, because we spend a third of our life sleeping. Mm-hmm. If we spend a third of our day working, our lifespan essentially becomes 30. If we, you know, take time to do chores and things of that nature, maybe our lifespan is 10 years at the end of the day. And so really, how do we want to spend our time? There's a quote that I love. I believe it's from Annie Dillard in her book, The Writing Life, where she says, and I quote this often, I think in my books several times, but how we spend our days is how we spend our lives. And, you know, how you spend each day filters up to create a meaningful life. Or, and I think productivity in itself is not a worthwhile goal. And I say that as somebody who's been obsessed with this idea for years. Mm-hmm. Now, I think we have to have a bigger goal than productivity. Productivity is the process through which we achieve our biggest ambitions, our biggest goals, whether, you know, it's inspiring millions of people, whether it's, you know, changing the world in other ways, however it is that we want to make an impact. I think productivity exists to help us get there.
I love it, Chris. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. It reminds me of a video that I saw from Gary Vaynerchuk. I think he posted it on Facebook and Instagram a couple times. And he's like in a car and D-Rock's there filming this moment. And he rolls down the window and this woman's there. And she's like, oh my gosh, it's Gary V. Like, let's take a selfie. Let's take a picture. And she goes, okay, but before you go, like, give me some words of inspiration, motivation. What do you have to say? And he goes, you're going to die. And everybody's like, what? And she's like, thank you. Because he's like, you're going to die. Like, yeah. Get whatever you need to do done before that happens. Yeah. And it's kind of like, at first you're kind of shocked. And then second, you're like, wow, why am I wasting my time? Like, let's get productive so we can do the things we want to do. Because one day we're not going to be here anymore. So let's make that impact. Let's leave that legacy. And I think that goes perfectly along with what you said. But obviously that's Gary Vee's style and this is your style.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of covers the spectrum there.
Yeah. You know, not to get all hippy dippy on you here, but I love going on meditation retreats. That's one of the things that I do because, you know, we talk about focus a lot in terms of our productivity, and meditation simply allows us to bring more of our attention to what's in front of us in the moment. It's backed up by neuroscience. The science shows that in any given moment, we only bring 53% of our attention to what's in front of us. And so half of the time we're thinking about what we did wrong and, you know, what we have coming up next, and we're fantasizing and we're not there. you know, we're not actually where we need to be. You know, our mind is wandering off when we're taking a shower. You know, it's already in the office, even though we're taking a beautiful, relaxing shower. And I think this is your story reminded me of a meditation retreat I went on a while back. It was a New Year's retreat, and there was a death meditation. And it sounds like such a dark idea, doesn't it? You think of like somebody in a cape coming to take your soul away. Or I don't know what
dementor
come to your mind,
or something.
But yeah, dementor. That's exactly what came into my mind. that's a real death meditation, isn't it? But it was really, you know, we're gonna die. How do we want to spend our time? It's that simple. Mm-hmm. You know, what's valuable to you? What do you want? What do you want to accomplish? And I think productivity exists to allow you to work towards those goals on a daily basis. You know, we were chatting around the definition of productivity, where it's how much we accomplish, but it's kind of like a micro accomplishment, isn't it? Because, you know, when we're perfectly productive, we accomplish a lot on a daily basis. And what that does is it filters into these weekly goals that we have, and the monthly goals, and the yearly goals, and the overall goals that we set for ourselves. You know, it's one thing to set a New Year's resolution, which you may have already broken, to like lose 10 or 15 pounds. But it's on a daily basis and on a moment by moment basis that we actually act towards what's important and what's valuable to us. And I think that's where productivity lies, is we all know what we want. You know, some of us more than others. You know, we're all kind of equally lost in that regard, maybe. But how we act towards it on a daily basis. And I think that comes down to the intentions that we set, how well we focus in the moment, and how productive we are.
Perfect way to end the show, Chris. Thank you so much for that and for being here and spending time with us today. Where can people find your book and more information from you?
It's available wherever books are sold. You know, go into a bookstore, it's there. It's on Audible. We did a fun audio edition. If you happen to speak another language, it's being translated into a number of fun languages around the world.
Nice. Congrats.
And yeah, thank you. It's wild, because right now it's this is going to sound like the largest humble brag in the world, but it's kind of how my days are comprised right now. But it's a bestseller in Taiwan and Korea right now. And I'm finding that I have these calls like scheduled at like 6 a.m. so that I can do interviews with these various countries. I'm exhausted, and I probably need to manage my energy a bit better, but I'm having a blast. And so, you know, it's available wherever you can find books. My website is alifeofproductivity.com, and I write a weekly column on there. And that's where I'm also on Twitter. When I'm on that distractions device, at Wiggle Chicken is my Twitter username.
Wiggle Chicken.
It's very Wiggle Chicken.
Tell me about that.
I'm a professional productivity expert. And so what other username would I choose? Now, I think it was, do you remember Neopets? Did you ever participate in Neopets?
Were they sort of like digital pets that you could feed and raise?
Yeah, it's like Neopets.com. I played this site like way like a decade ago, maybe 15 years ago. But I think the name of my first Neopet was Wiggle Chicken.
That's so good.
Before any of this productivity stuff happened, I got that username because, you know, I was an early adopter to Twitter. And now I like do productivity stuff and I don't want to give it up for some reason. So I'm at Wiggle Chicken, but my professional one is at ALO Productivity, where you can find my posts and stuff like that.
Nice, nice. I had a Digimon, which was like a keychain version.
Oh,
of that.
Man. Yeah, those are great.
But I think
they went around your belt or something.
Yeah, yeah. I think I killed my first few and then I stopped because I wasn't good at it or whatever.
And now you have a family.
Yeah,
so,
and there's, everybody's healthy and happy, so I'm good.
Oh, good.
I'd rather
That's
have it
good.
Be that way than the other way around. So, yeah, man, Chris, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate you, and all the best.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Chris Bailey, again from alifeofproductivity.com. You can get all the links and the resources mentioned in this episode at smartpassiveincome.com/session258. And one final message from me related to productivity. Just don't forget your why. Why are you doing all this work? Why is this even something that's important to you. And the reason why I want you to think about that is because when you're so deep into your work, when you get into the trenches, when you are in the tools and you're in the software and you're talking to people and you're trying to grow and scale and make things work, it can be very, very easy to forget why you're doing what you're doing. And if you forget why you're doing what you're doing, you're going to not want to do it anymore. You need your why in order to move forward and break through those barriers that are going to try and hold you back. And so just keep that in mind as you move forward. For me, my why is very easy to find because it's you guys. I see it in not only the numbers and the ratings and the reviews, and thank you for that, by the way, but I also have handwritten notes that I look at every single day before I work or whenever I get into a weird moment in my productivity and I just don't want to do anything. I look behind me, for those of you who have seen my office tour, SPITV episode number 2, I give you a little tour of my home office. We'll put a link in the show notes for that as well. You can see a wall where there are pinned a number of handwritten notes from the SPI audience. I actually don't have enough wall space to include all the notes that are coming in, and that is why I do what I do. That's my metric or barometer to allow me to realize that I'm actually doing meaningful work and that I am making a difference. And so I want you to find your why and make it easy for you to remember, whether that's a post-it note on your desktop computer or a sticker on your laptop or whatever it is. I don't know, but find it, make it easy for you to remember, and just keep going. I'd also like to give a big shout out to GoDaddy for sponsoring today's episode. You obviously know or have heard of GoDaddy. That's where you can go and register domain names. They also have a lot of other tools to help all of us who are building life-fulfilling independent ventures, just giving us the tools, the insights, and the people to transform our ideas into personal initiatives of success. And they're the largest technology provider dedicated to small businesses, the largest domain register with over 62 million domain names, which is insane. I think like 60 million of them are mine, but no, I'm just kidding. But I do have a lot of them. And I do get domain names to host on my server. I do get domain names to forward to different parts of my website. And it's just super easy to use and obviously very economical. And you can actually get a 30% discount if you use my code, which is SMART30 at checkout. So GoDaddy.com, use the code SMART30 for 30% off new purchases. So check it out. Thanks. And finally, once again, I just want to thank you so much for all of your support. I look forward to serving you in next week's episode where we're going to be talking with two experts who have done extremely well on YouTube and how to actually get started and set up your YouTube channel from scratch. And we'll be doing that together. So until then, keep moving forward and keep taking those big, bold actions that are going to help you in your business and in your life. Cheers. Take care. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at www.smartpassiveincome.com.
Entrepreneurs, what is the smart way to save when your growing business takes you on the road? Whether you're going to events or conventions or you're speaking somewhere, no matter what it is, you need to sign up for a free membership with Hertz Business Rewards. Yep, Hertz Rental Car created a program to help small and mid-sized businesses save money. Work trips, client meetings, industry conferences. With Hertz Business Rewards, you save at least 20% every time you rent a car. And you'll save on more than just the daily rate. Members earn credits redeemable toward free rental days. And it's also free to add an additional driver if any additional coworkers come along. And for those Gen Z entrepreneurs out there, no young renter fees. Plus, sign up for Hertz Business Rewards today and earn 3x credit during your first 90 days. These benefits add up to big savings that stack more dollars in your wallet. Join for free at hertz.com/business rewards. Applies to base rate, taxes, fees, and options excluded. Additional terms and exclusions apply. Visit hertz.com/business rewards to learn more. Hey, have you ever wondered what makes the difference between a 1 and a 5-star review? Well, turn into Behind the Review, a phenomenal podcast from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Each week, Yelp's small business expert, Emily Washkovic, features a different conversation with a different reviewer or business owner to find out what was really going on, as the title suggests, behind the review. Recently, for example, Emily featured an episode about Aldea Country Eatery, the number 5 spot in the world on Yelp's top 100 places to eat. Emily interviews a wide variety of customers and business owners from a wide variety of industries, tabletop gaming companies, fitness industry, you name it. This is a really fascinating peek into what makes a great customer experience for any business, and you won't want to miss out. So listen to Behind the Review right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.